two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, are you ready to add a sprinkle of joy to your day? Then you need to check out Add to Cart. Hi, I'm Sujan Pak.
And I'm Kulap Vilaysack. We're your hosts, and on this show, we talk about the things we buy, the things we buy into, and what it says about who we are.
That's right. Each week, we're going to have some honest and maybe, you know, a little TMI conversations about all the fabulous, weird, wonderful things we're adding to or ditching from our carts. You know, we talk about beauty products, latest health trends, philosophies we're passionate about. Nothing is off limits on this podcast.
We're diving deep into everything we and our guests buy into and exploring what it reveals about who we truly are. We're going to decide what's worth the investment, be it money or emotions.
Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes out on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
This is In the Bubble with Andy Slavitt. Welcome. Happy Wednesday. Don't forget, you can email me at andy@lemonadamedia.com. A lot going on. Very busy week. We have some bank failures. Silicon Valley Bank, you may have seen it. Actually, it was my company's bank and the bank of many of the companies that we have started. And so, fascinating situation. Story for another time. We had the Oscars. If you watch the Oscars, there was an interesting moment in Jimmy Kimmel's introduction.
You look great. Everybody looks so great. When I look around this room, I can't help but wonder, is Ozempic right for me?
So what's Jimmy Kimmel talking about? He's talking about a new faddish weight loss treatment that people are giving themselves off medication. They're actually giving themselves a shot. This is a shot of medication that's approved for obesity and for diabetes. I'm guessing if you looked around that audience that very few people there were suffering from obesity, although you never know. Certainly there are people that are taking this medication now in greater and greater numbers and doses because it is a new way to lose weight. Interesting to think about, particularly from the perspective of all the things that go into how we think about weight and weight loss and what we should be taking drugs for and what we shouldn't. There's also side effects. There are also shortages, yet it is not stopping this from taking off. Let me talk to two great experts today. Elaine Chen, who is a writer at Stat News. She covers cardiovascular disease and obesity and diabetes. And Anya Yastreboff, who is an obesity medicine physician scientist at Yale University. She focuses a lot on the development of these drugs. In fact, she is involved in research with some of the pharmaceutical companies and companies that are involved here, like Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk. There's a list I could go on and on and on. Also includes the former Weight Watchers company, which is now called WW, curiously. We're going to talk about that on the show. Amgen, Biohaven, a number of others. You know, involved enough that I think important for her that this is disclosed. And you can decide for yourself as you listen to this episode whether or not you think that colors her perspective on these drugs. But that's why we have her on and a reporter, so you can get a sense of what's happening and what Jimmy Kimmel is talking about. We're always on top of the Oscars here at In the Bubble. Let's bring him on. Elaine, Anya, welcome to the bubble.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
So some celebrities are telling us that we have some pills that can make us lose weight. Like, when is that never true? What's going on here, Elaine? There's some new faddish weight loss drugs. Are they weight loss drugs or what's really happening?
So they're, most of them are actually injectable medications, and they were initially developed for diabetes. But then, you know, as researchers study them, they realize they can also lead to a lot of weight loss for patients. So then they were studied and then approved also for patients with obesity. You know, so they have two indications for diabetes and also for obesity. And I think what you were referring to more recently, kind of people who don't necessarily have clinical obesity have caught on to these medications and have maybe misused them, as some outlets have reported, and kind of been used by some celebrities or people in Hollywood as kind of a quick way to lose weight before big events. But that was really never the intention of what the drugs were meant to do. They were meant to treat people who, you know, have obesity and are needing some kind of a solution with chronic weight management.
Got it. So Anya, can you tell us about these drugs and maybe also help us get a better understanding of your definition for obesity? And I know not everybody loves using that word. So, you know, if you want to use a different word or explain that as well, feel free.
Sure. So obesity is a complex neurometabolic disease. So basically, hormones inform our brain how much energy, or specifically how much fat, we would like to carry. We don't want to carry not enough fat because then we would starve. And we also don't want to carry too much fat because then we wouldn't be able to carry out all the things that we do every day. And so really, we want to carry an appropriate amount of energy, or specifically an appropriate amount of fat. And what's happened in our current obesogenic environment, this environment filled with highly palatable food and increased stress, lack of sleep, lack of physical activity, is that our body has started to carry extra weight or extra fat. And so we call that obesity, the neurometabolic disease of obesity. And so what these medications do is that they mimic these hormones that inform our brain about how much energy we're carrying. They inform our brain about that. And these medications mimic those hormones to impact mechanisms in the brain to help us feel satiated, to help us feel full, and to help us to consume less food. And potentially, they also may impact energy expenditure, and that's yet to be demonstrated.
So they basically tell us we're not hungry, or we're less hungry.
That we feel full earlier.
Feel earlier. Okay, so there's three drugs here. And I'm terrible at pronouncing drug names, but Ozempic, Mounjaro, and Wegovy. Who names these things? You don't name these things, do you, Anya?
No, I don't.
Okay. Elaine, you don't name them either, right?
I'm not involved.
Okay, and I don't name them. Okay, so someone else names them. Okay, tell us what we need to know, Anya, about them.
So Wegovy and Ozempic are a medication called semaglutide. So the generic name is semaglutide. Wegovy is FDA approved for chronic weight management or obesity treatment, whereas Ozempic is FDA approved for the treatment of type 2 diabetes. Mounjaro is a medication called tirzepatide, and that is FDA approved for the treatment of type 2 diabetes. Now, these medications are different. So semaglutide is a GLP-1 receptor agonist, whereas tirzepatide is a GIP-GLP-1 receptor agonist. So these different terms that I'm using, they're hormones.
And what is the difference? How do they work for the scientific among us?
Yeah. So these hormones, there's receptors for them all over our body in different tissues. And one of the places where there are receptors for these specific hormones are the brain. And that's where we think that they're having an effect on weight.
Okay. So far, this sounds awesome. Just give myself a little shot and I can fit into one size smaller outfit for the award ceremony. The Oscars were this week. That sounds awesome. Is it awesome, Elaine, or is there more to be heard about this?
Well, first of all, there are side effects to the drug that can be quite unpleasant for people. Like when you start taking it, you can experience diarrhea, nausea, vomiting. For some people, it's very extreme and very kind of difficult the first maybe few days or weeks that they're taking it. But beyond that, I think that a lot of the way that I think obesity in general has been viewed in society has been viewed as a cosmetic issue and a result of an individual's own actions and an individual's own kind of failing of willpower. And I think the drugs more broadly are kind of working to change that understanding of what obesity is, that like it's not something that people just want to change the way they look. It's just they actually have something going on biologically in their body, and that's what the drugs are addressing. And so I think there's a weird conflict here where like some people are treating it as like a cosmetic treatment, whereas for people who really are using it as a medical treatment, it's not just changing the way they look. It's really about treating, you know, something going on in their body biologically.
Right. So you're speaking to the cause of this, which I think is important to get to. But at some level, aren't people taking them to look better, feel better, look better? All the things we know are associated with being lower weight, being healthier. Like those are all positive things. Now, the side effects don't sound great, but those things you mentioned sound like things that most people seem to want. And so is it a good thing? Is it an advancement to say, hey, for whatever reason, if you could tolerate these side effects, this drug is a good advancement?
So first, in terms of the side effects, a lot of those can be mitigated with appropriately slow titration of the medication. So slow up titration of the medication. So giving our bodies a time to adjust to taking these hormone-based medications. And so again, in the trials, we have to go up at a certain rate, right? Because the trials have to follow protocols. But in clinical practice, we can really tailor treatment to patients. So if somebody starts taking one of these medications and they have some nausea, we slow down the up titration so that they don't have vomiting, so that they don't have these other side effects. So these medications are really well tolerated as long as you really tailor treatment to how the patient is doing. Other patients won't have side effects and you can continue to go up as per, you know, what was done in the trials. So that's the first thing. Now, in terms of raising this point of really treating the disease of obesity, I think this is absolutely critical. And obesity is a disease. And we often say it's a disease, but we don't treat it like we treat other diseases. And ultimately, we have to treat obesity by treating that underlying biology, by treating the pathophysiology of obesity. And I think that these medications do just that. They treat that underlying pathophysiology and those brain mechanisms that are altered in our obesogenic environment over long-term years and years of exposure.
Now, what I was just indicating, I was kind of being a little bit sneaky in my question, in that I was sort of mixing people who are using this drug off-label, i.e. they don't meet a clinical definition of obesity, i.e. the Hollywood stars that Elaine and I were just gossiping about, versus people who have really an underlying condition, a medical condition. So what is your view? Because we are reporting shortages of these drugs available for people with diabetes because people are getting access to them off-label.
So I think there's a few things there. First is that nearly 90% of people who have diabetes also have obesity. So we shouldn't be separating out one or the other. It's a continuum. The next thing is that, you know, in terms of individuals taking these medications, we don't know who has other negative sequelae of carrying extra weight. So let's just say that your body mass index is 27, because the criteria for taking these medications is either a body mass index of greater than 30 or a body mass index of greater than 27 with an obesity-related disease or condition. So that could be type 2 diabetes, it could be high blood pressure, it could be high cholesterol. And so one thing that, you know, we don't realize is some of these individuals could have a body mass index of 27 and have high blood pressure or high cholesterol, and we don't know that. So that's one thing. We don't know what the medical condition is of some of the people, right, taking these medications. We can't make the assumption that they are metabolically healthy or otherwise healthy. And then the other part of this is that, you know, there are many medications that are used in other ways. So for example, testosterone is oftentimes misused and we don't necessarily focus on that, right? We move forward and we use the medication appropriately. Just like for this, our goal is health. Our goal is treating individuals with obesity to help them live healthier lives. And that is going to be our goal.
Let's take a quick break and come right back. And I want to get your thoughts on this, Elaine.
there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, and we're back. So, Elaine, what did you think about what Anya was saying before the break, that it's not so clear that people are misusing them and that we shouldn't be overly concerned about people misusing these drugs for simple weight loss?
I think I do agree with this idea that we don't always know what's going on with a certain person. So we can't always assume that like you can just look at someone and you're like, oh, they should or shouldn't be taking the drug. I think that goes back to the issue of like viewing obesity as like a cosmetic kind of concern. One thing I wanted to know is the shortages are getting better. Like they were a really big deal at the end of last year, but they have mostly gotten better now. And another thing I wanted to bring up is I think a lot of the discussion and coverage about the shortages have been really interesting because they've been framed around how they're leading people with diabetes to suffer. Like people with diabetes can't get the drugs. And a lot of the coverage that I've seen have all focused on what are people with diabetes going to do, and kind of blamed people using these drugs for weight loss as kind of the bad guys in this situation. That's what a lot of the coverage seems like to me, without getting into the nuance that these drugs have also been approved for obesity, like the exact same active ingredient.
Sure.
And so I think that reflects a lot of still maybe people like Anya, I think would say like a lot of the bias there is still against people with obesity and just treating obesity as like its own disease.
Yeah. The line that I'm trying to draw is that one between obesity and diabetes, because as Anya said, they're co-occurring. And by the way, even if they weren't, they're both medical conditions.
Yeah.
I'm trying to draw the distinction between kind of on-label and off-label.
Yeah.
Which is to say, the example you gave of someone going to an award ceremony and wanting to lose 15 pounds. And like, who can't relate to that? And it does sound appealing and attractive. But the question that I'm trying to ask is, if someone out there is listening and says, you know what? Doesn't sound like the worst thing in the world. I'm not obese. I don't have diabetes, but I sure would love to lose 10 pounds the easy way by not feeling as hungry. And I'm trying to understand from both of you whether or not that's a problem.
Yeah. I guess on one point there is if you do think about it from a societal perspective, there is this idea of like, yeah, they're maybe taking away from people who need them. And, you know, we're still recovering from shortages. So there's that aspect. Also, the aspect of like these drugs haven't been studied in that kind of a population. They've only been studied in people who have obesity or, you know, diabetes. And we don't know what the side effects look like. And we also don't know what the benefits look like for these people who don't have obesity who are using them. I have talked with some kind of people who work in the eating disorder space that they are a little bit concerned about the kind of psychological effects of people using these medications. Mm. You know, because we are still in a world where there is still a lot of emphasis on how you look and weight. And so they're concerned that when you introduce this medication, it could be potentially harmful psychologically. Like if people don't lose enough weight, will they try to get on higher doses? Will they think of themselves as a failure if they don't lose enough weight? So I think there are some psychological effects of the drugs that we haven't yet really studied and really understand much about. Mm. And then from like a more kind of messaging perspective, it kind of, again, further reinforces the idea that obesity is a cosmetic concern rather than something that's biological. So it just sends maybe the wrong societal message. But yeah, Anya, if you have anything to say.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of treating obesity to treat the health effects. Now, in terms of this idea of the social desire for thinness, that's not obesity. That's different. And that's not the goal here. The goal here is to help people lead healthier lives. And these are, you know, the key here is these are anti-obesity medications and they're chronic. So obesity is a chronic disease. So in order to treat the obesity, in order to not only lose the weight or specifically that we'd like patients to lose fat mass, right? But in order to lose the weight and maintain that weight reduction, you, at this point, what we know is that you have to keep taking the medication. And so this is not short-term therapy because obesity is a chronic disease. So we have to provide chronic long-term treatment for this disease.
So as a doctor, if you had a patient or someone walk in who did say, hey, doc, I really want to look better for cosmetic purposes, but they didn't meet the definition of 27% or more body fat, what would your response be as a physician?
If the patient doesn't have obesity, or as we talked about, doesn't meet the criteria in terms of other weight-related conditions with an elevated BMI, then they should not be treated with these medications.
Another interesting and somewhat related thing is a news item the other day that Weight Watchers, although I think they now call themselves WW, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
has essentially, I think, acquired a telemedicine company. So they basically can sell these medications online. And I know you've done some work with Weight Watchers, or I think you have, Anya, but it feels to me like a real departure from a company that was all about checking your weight, motivation, healthy meals, a program to eat right and exercise, to now saying, hey, you know what, we are going to be about selling a medication. How should we be thinking about that? Maybe I'll start with you, Elaine. What do you think that symbolizes?
I think, and it's interesting because WW recently, I believe, had kind of pivoted to try to focus less. I think that might be part of the reason behind the name change, to focus less on weight and focus more on kind of holistic wellness. And then it's interesting that they're now kind of acquiring this telehealth provider and kind of getting back into weight. And I think it just shows how pervasive these new weight loss drugs are becoming. Like, it's not just Weight Watchers or WW. There are so many telehealth companies out there that are providing these medications. And I think it just shows how much demand there is, how a lot of different telehealth providers or clinics are kind of jumping at this, because it really is like they see this as a huge financial opportunity to offer these drugs because there's just such great demand. So I think it just shows how pervasive the drugs are and how they're really kind of just getting everywhere, really.
So it's a financial decision.
I think that's a big part of it.
What do you think, Anya?
So I think that in terms of thinking about nutritious eating or healthful eating and physical activity, it's really important to reframe. Why do we do these things? It's for health. So Elaine was alluding to the fact of, you know, wellness, but we do this for health. These interventions over time, as we've seen, they're effective for some degree of weight reduction, at least certain types of, you know, nutritious eating changes or dietary changes. But in general, it's not a high degree of weight reduction and it's not maintained. People are not able to maintain it because you're basically using your prefrontal cortex. You're using your executive function to try and control every morsel of food that you eat for the rest of your life, which is not a treatment for obesity. We cannot overcome both our environment as well as the neurometabolic changes that have happened in our biology. Now, in terms of the medications or surgery, those target disease mechanisms. So what I often speak about with my patients is, you know, you have the disease of obesity, and we're going to give you therapies that target the mechanisms of that disease. So don't worry about the number on the scale, because again, we don't have a great way of assessing their fat mass. That's really what we'd like to do, but don't worry about the number on the scale. focus on taking the medicine. And now let's talk about what are some healthy ways that you can change the food that you eat? And what are some things that you love to do to move? How can we incorporate more physical activity into your daily life? So let the medications or the surgery target the disease mechanisms, and let's focus on those lifestyle changes for your health.
So did WW have it wrong before, or do they have it wrong now? What do you think, Elaine? Which, because it's a very different, these are two very different approaches.
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of research behind, like what Anya was saying, was that changes in diet and exercise alone, it's really hard to achieve sustained weight loss. So I guess if their goal is to want to have their clients be able to achieve sustained weight loss, then the move to get a telehealth provider that would prescribe these medications makes sense. I think one thing that a lot of these telehealth providers are grappling with is like, what is their value add on top of just prescribing drugs? Because then couldn't patients just go to a clinic or a doctor and just get the drugs? And I think a lot of these telehealth companies are saying that they're offering additional lifestyle coaching and stuff like that. But I think it's yet to be seen how effective that's done through telehealth and, you know, how much value these telehealth companies really can add. So that's the question, I think, for all of these telehealth companies that are trying to get in on this space.
Let's do a final break and we'll come right back.
People love to pretend that there are simple formulas for living your best life now. Eat this and you won't get sick. Manifest it and everything will work out. But there are some things you can choose and some things you can't. And it's okay that life isn't always getting better. I'm Kate Bowler, and on Everything Happens, I speak with kind, smart, funny people about life as it really is. Beautiful, terrible, and everything in between. Let's be human together. Everything Happens is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't get enough of your favorite Lemonada Media podcasts? By subscribing to Lemonada Premium today, you'll gain access to fun and inspiring bonus content from all of our podcasts across the Lemonada Media Network. As a subscriber, you can listen to never-before-heard interview excerpts, behind-the-scenes segments, and continue to uncover new ways to make life suck less through all of our exclusive subscriber audio. Check out a free trial of Lemonada Premium today in the Apple Podcast app by clicking on our podcast logo and then the subscribe button.
Okay, we're back. Anya, please, what did you think about what Elaine was saying?
So just in terms of, again, this idea of we can prescribe medications to help our patients lose weight and specifically, hopefully, lose fat mass. But, you know, there's not a medicine that can help in terms of eating more healthfully or moving more. And I think that's the gap that is being filled by other interventions. For example, interventions provided by companies that can provide lifestyle interventions, like more healthful eating as well as physical activity.
Yeah. Now, look, to be fair, in most of what we do in medicine, whether it's trying to lower our cholesterol or our blood pressure, there is a combination of medications and lifestyle changes. It's not really either or. We're encouraged to do multiple things. And if we truly want to think about obesity as something that is treatable medically, then why not think about both pharmacological as well as behavioral recommendations?
I mean, if you think about, you know, what do we do when a patient comes in and they have diabetes and their hemoglobin A1C is 10 or 11? We say, you know, here are several medications. Let's figure out which one may work best for you. And then in the context of taking this medication, I'd like for you to speak with our dietitian and let's talk about ways to incorporate physical activity into your daily life. What types of things do you like to do to move? And in the same way, that's the same approach that we should take for our patients with obesity. We should offer them therapies that target disease mechanisms while at the same time providing them with support, behavioral support, to be able to make healthy food choices and to move more.
Can you make any counter argument, Anya, about any concern that people would become too dependent on a pharmaceutical medication here? You know, I know you've done a lot of work with the pharma companies, and so I would ask you to be just sort of take the other side of this. Are there any things that people should watch out for if they're listening to this and thinking about either for themselves or recommending this to someone in their family that they pursue a course like this?
Well, we talked about the chronic need to treat a chronic disease chronically. So for example, if you were to take a blood pressure medication because you have hypertension, if you stop taking an antihypertensive, your blood pressure would go back up. So in the same way, if you stop taking an anti-obesity medication, at least what we've seen in trials so far is that the weight comes back because, again, your brain wants to defend this higher amount of fat mass when we stop the medication. Now, whether it has to be the medication that you started with or whether you can switch to a different medication, that could be a potential option. But ultimately, we have to provide therapy that targets disease mechanisms. So right now, that's medications and surgery.
Elena, are these expensive medications?
They're quite expensive. The annual net price for Wegovy is about $13,600. I just wrote about a perspective out in the New England Journal of Medicine this past weekend, looking at how much it would cost Medicare if Medicare were to cover these drugs, because Medicare currently doesn't cover any weight loss drugs. And there was a lot of concern, and these were health policy researchers, there was a lot of concern that it would be very costly for Medicare. It would probably likely lead premiums to increase in the long run. And cost is a really big issue here because there is such a large proportion of the U.S. population that are technically eligible for these drugs, like almost half the U.S. population. Even if the price of the drug were to come down, it would just be really, really hard still for the health system to pay for, you know, a substantial percentage of the eligible population to take these drugs over the long term.
And in the meantime, if insurance doesn't pay for it, then people would be paying for this out of their own pocket. And let's face it, if what Anya was saying is right, that you, as soon as you stop taking it, you know, it stops working, then you're talking about, you know, $13,000 a year for the rest of your life, which not a lot of people can afford. I'm sure the super wealthy could do that with no problem. It just leads us back to where we started, Elaine, which is that this faddish use for, let me, a celebrity or somebody like that, just take a medication like this so I can lose weight rapidly and then stop taking it, you know, until I need to do it again, feels like that's the danger.
Yeah. It's really difficult for a lot of people right now because a lot of payers still don't cover them. It's raising a lot of equity concerns because also obesity is higher prevalence in, you know, lower income, racial and ethnic minority groups. And not just obesity, but also some of the downstream complications from obesity, like diabetes and heart disease, also more prevalent among those groups. So there's a big concern about inequities. And also this has led to, I've also written about some of this, where people are going to kind of alternative sources like compounding pharmacies or even kind of websites online where they order the underlying chemical and they mix it themselves at home because they can't afford or get access to the original branded medications, which is a really risky way of trying to get access to these medications.
Mm. And I mean, I do think that obesity treatment is the most expensive that it's ever going to be. It's the most expensive right now. And, you know, we really have to think about scaling. How do we scale treatment for obesity? And if we think about, we didn't shy away from treating patients with hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and hyperlipidemia, and collectively they affect just as many people. So we really have to think about how to scale this. And one of the medications, liraglutide, at the 1.8 milligram dose will become generic at the end of this year. And, you know, the efficacy is different than these newer medications, but that will be a GLP-1 receptor agonist that will be hopefully more readily available to more patients.
I'm going to challenge you on that, Anya. I'm going to say that 5 years from now, when we look at the state of the art, obesity drugs are going to be even more money than they are today.
I hope not. I really hope not.
Here's my point of view. Yes, pharma companies are forced to bring down their prices when they go off patent. And yes, if they have competition, sometimes you could see that working when they're branded. But more often than not, you see companies, as you've seen in the insulin space, keep their prices surprisingly level with one another and high. And then when there are things that bring down their prices, they come out with new indications. And so all of the things that we would like to see better, fewer side effects, more titration, maybe an easier way to give the shot, those all become excuses for the price to go up. So, you know, I've spent a career trying to drag prices down, and it is a huge battle. You're battling against a massive machine. So I wish I could share your optimism that it is all about scale, but I don't think it is. I think it's about a lack of shame.
I guess I have to stay optimistic. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to do what I do.
Well, the reason to be, I mean, just be optimistic, but just speak out about the need for the price to come down. And it doesn't happen on its own, is my view. I don't know if you've got a view on that, Elaine.
Well, yes, I was going to mention that the companies are continuing to develop, even kind of, they're trying to add more to what exists already. So, you know, like semaglutide targets one hormone, the GLP-1 hormone. Eli Lilly's tirzepatide targets two hormones, GLP and GIP. There's another one in development that targets three hormones. So I think that pharma companies are continuing to innovate. And I think that potentially gives them reason to say, you know, we're creating a new product here and, you know, price it based on this innovation or this new product or this new feature that they're adding.
It's exactly how they work. It's exactly how they work in my experience. It's how they've always worked. Now, maybe they'll do something completely different here that they haven't done before, but that's not my experience, particularly when they have a drug that people want and will pay for. But I want to give you both the last word. You know, what should people take away most importantly, you know, as they see about, read about, hear about this kind of medication? Why don't you start, Anya, and I'll let you finish, Elaine.
I think the most important thing is to really remember that obesity is a chronic treatable disease, and we need to use therapies that target disease mechanism. And I think medications and surgery target disease mechanisms. And within that context, we need to provide behavioral interventions that promote health as individuals are losing weight with these medications and with surgery.
Great. Thank you so much for being here, Anya. Elaine, what final thoughts do you have for us?
I would reiterate that I think there is a lot of kind of misunderstanding in that these are drugs just meant for people with diabetes. They are the same versions of the drugs indicated for obesity. So, you know, there are people who are using these for actual medical treatment. At the same time, there is some concern among people that they don't want the marketing and the messaging behind these drugs to be taken too far. There are people who want more studies on what are the psychological effects, potential risks for eating disorders. They also don't want the medical community to lose sight of the fact that there are rising obesity rates, not just because of what's going on with people biologically, but because we have this environment around us of, you know, lack of healthy foods and physical exercise that some people are concerned that, you know, we shouldn't lose sight of.
Okay. Well, so that sounds great. Thank you both for being here. I'm going to say that what I heard is don't rush out and take this unless your doctor tells you this is something that you're indicated for. And we maybe create with greater understanding, there can be a little bit better acceptance and understanding of one another. So that was one of my other takeaways. Thank you so much both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Good episodes coming up, I promise you. We're going to be talking about the banking crisis. We're going to be talking about the new decision by the U.S. government to start drilling in Alaska, and more broadly about this idea of drilling into our oceans. And there's a new U.N. agreement on protecting our oceans. How does that clash with this decision? But a very interesting decision that's really pitting people who are really focused on climate change with people who want to see us develop more energy. So we're going to go deep into those topics in our next couple of episodes. Thanks for tuning in. We'll chat on Friday. Thank you for listening in the bubble. We're a production of Lemonada Media. Martine Macias, Catherine Barnes, and Cal Sheely produce our show, and I love them dearly. Our mix is by Noah Smith and James Barber. They're awesome part of the team. Steve Nelson is the vice president of weekly content. He's amazing. And of course, the ultimate big bosses, Jessica Cordova Kramer and Stephanie Whittleswax, and they are wonderful. They executive produced the show. Our theme was composed by Dan Millad and Oliver Hill, and additional music by Ivan Kiryev. You can find out more about our show on social media at Lemonada Media, where you can also get a transcript of the show. And you can find me on Post at A Slavitt or on a place called Twitter, still at A Slavitt. Follow In the Bubble wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership. And if you like what you heard today, email us, talk to us, tell your friends. We appreciate you so much. Talk to you next time.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jose Andres. Maybe you know me from my restaurants or maybe from Wall Central Kitchen, the organization I founded to feed people after disasters. Well, it's time for you to know my podcast, Longer Tables. Each episode, I get to know fascinating people in the most intimate way, through food. Stacey Abrams, Jojo Ma, Jane Goodall, Padma Lakshmi. I will answer questions from listeners too. Join me in building longer tables, not higher walls. Whatever you get your podcasts.